Well, conflict is something that we all face. We do it in our family groups. We have conflict between husband and wife. We do it in our workplaces, of course. We do it in our unis, in our retirement villages, on the road, in the supermarket, in the footy field, in the grandstands, in the car parks. We have conflict between companies. We have conflict between states. Not that we don't love the Victorians, but there's some conflict there. We have conflict between nations, don't we? And the full eruption of that is called war. Usually in Western society, conflict is divided between two extremes. Sometimes we call it fight or flight. Sometimes we call it confrontation and avoidance. It can look a little bit like this, the picture that's going to be on your screen. It seems when we talk about conflict, most people react in, or most people think, in these two polar opposites. Either we get stuck into the person, full on, full face, straight in, no holds barred, toe to toe, straight at it, or the opposite, of course, is avoidance. Stick our head in the sand, do whatever we can, and dodge the issue. Don't want to be a part of it. During a visit to a mental asylum, a visitor asked the director how they determine who needs to be a special guest of that mental asylum. And the director said, well, it's very simple. What we do is we fill the bath to full with water, and then we offer a teaspoon, a teacup, and a bucket, and we ask the prospective inmate or guest to empty the bath. And the visitor said, oh, well, of course, you would expect that the person who is not insane to use the bucket because they're bigger than the teaspoon and the teacup. The director said, no, we actually expect that most logical people would pull the plug out. Would you like the bed next to the window or the door? You know, sometimes we need to look for other conclusions than what everybody else is seeing. Sometimes we need to know, or we need to be assured, that normal is not normal and that we should not do what everybody else is doing. This is 100% true when it comes to conflict. And the pattern that we have in society is a different pattern than what we see in Scripture. And I want to lead you into that place today. And at the end of the service, I'm going to ask you to do a response. We'll get there in a minute. Let me recap. We've been working now for a couple of weeks, this is the third week, on this series of the Gospel of Peace. And I've taken the theme from a book entitled The Peacemaker. It's a great read if you ever want to read it. I think it's only a few dollars. You can find online or in Coorong. There are small group studies also that accompany what I'm saying. So if your small group would like to pick that up, you're most welcome to do that. The first week we talked about the concept of peace, and I asserted that the world is on a gigantic search for peace. It is the core of so many of our motivations and our deepest longing. And I said to you that there are three types of peace. You have to have these three in sequence or together in order to have this long for, or the sought after inner peace. It is peace with God, peace with others, and thirdly, peace with yourself. We also covered the biblical view of peace. The Old Testament uses this word shalom, which is far more than just what we understand about peace, which for us, it's the absence of conflict. Shalom is the wellness, a wholeness of all of your life, the whole integrity of all that you are about. It's a whole being, encompasses all of who we are. We also discovered that peace is God's nature. God is the God of peace. It is His character. Indeed, as we know, Jesus is described as the Prince of Peace. For God, peace is not so much a word, it's an action. The gospel, you can see it written in the New Testament, is referred to as the gospel of peace. It is God's actions in the world from the history of time, through the fall, coming right through till now and beyond, whenever God wraps it up, that God is on a search to bring reconciliation, peacemaking throughout in humanity. Our search for peace is really significant as an identity search, because we were made in the image of God, and without peace, we are lacking something, and there's something missing. We're all looking for it. Last week, I talked to you about facing your own faults, facing the issues that you bring to the table in any conflict, in any disruption of that peace. And I brought to you three things from the book of James, James chapter 4, three things that we need to face ourselves, which is our desire, our need to covet what others have, and our prayers, which are driven by wrong motives. What we have to do in anything we're talking about peace is honestly face our own faults. Today, I want to lift it another notch, and one more notch to go next week, and we gather around communion, perfectly timed, that we might be able to bring all that's going on, our dispeace, our issues with peace, around the table. But today, I want to talk to you particularly about speaking the truth. Speaking the truth in the context of the gospel of peace. It seems pretty obvious to me that between the two extremes of aggression and running away, most people choose running away. They don't want to be part of a conflict. They don't want to have a conflict with somebody else. They want to ignore it or push it away. And conflict is usually viewed as an unpleasant experience. But there is a middle ground, and that's where I want to lead us this morning, into this middle ground, and to talk to you particularly about what the Bible says about handling conflict, how you can do it in your life, how to handle it when someone has offended you. Let me just pull back from that for a moment. The need for a gospel of peace is often because we have different opinions, we have disagreements, we have disputes, we have something that breaks open between us and someone else in a relational sense. But it's also the need for the gospel of peace, also because we've often been on the end of someone else's attack. We've felt the sting of somebody else's words. We've been made to feel all sorts of feelings around someone else's thoughtfulness. And so we've got some issues going on inside of us. And I'm talking largely today about raising issues with someone else when we believe they have offended or hurt or indeed sinned against us. And I'm talking about, and I want to talk about, serving others by helping them take responsibility for their contribution to any conflict, a conflict that we have between us. Boy, I've got your attention this morning, haven't I? Wow. There are four things that we need to consider. Two are really pragmatic, practical things, and some stuff that you can actually implement in your own life. And two are more theological. Two are more ideologically driven, which underpins how we would respond. So here they are. The first thing is this. The first thing we need to consider when we want to go and have a conversation with someone, if you've got something going on, we want to deal with it. The first thing is it worth it? Is it worth dealing with this? There are some things in life that are actually just accidents, aren't they? There are some things that are said that should never have been said, but they were, and you know, it's really unfortunate. There's some things that have been done that should have never been done, but they were. There's some things that are just mistakes, and some are just careless. A friend of mine who was working for a church was in a conference with a few other social workers, and there was a couple of church employees, particularly around the areas of youth, and a couple of other from local government employees, and they were having a conference about the strategies that they use, that they employ, to help kids at risk move forward, have a better quality of life, have transition into more wholeness and be more helpful for society. And they were talking about the therapies that they were undertaking. At one point in the meeting, one of the social workers asked what model do the church employed people use? And without blinking an eyelid, one of the church employed youth workers said, "Oh, we use the forgiveness model." Now the social workers had never heard of that model. That was a new model to them. But guess what? We've heard about that model, haven't we? And that's the model that we need to employ. And we need to be liberal with our forgiveness. The words of Jesus ring true from Luke 6. They are incredibly challenging words for us. They're on the screen. This is our Bible reading for this morning. Here it is. Luke 6, verse 27, and then right down to 35. "But to you who are listening, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others what you'd have them do to you. If that's not strong enough, Jesus goes on. Listen to this. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies. Do good to them. And lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Whew. It's pretty solid stuff, isn't it? I think it's good. And the Bible does too, that we operate in a state of forgiveness. Sometimes we just need to see things as they are, and we need to move on. Sometimes we need to bear the cost of forgiveness in ourselves, and we need to act and demonstrate Christian maturity. It might be that we need to forgive someone in our heart. It might be as simple as that, to say, I'm purposely going to forgive you. And I'll talk a little bit more about forgiveness next week. It might be just so small that we should just forget about it. Just let it go. It might be that we need to have some prayer about it, and we need to invite someone else to come in and pray with us and help us pray through it and find resolution. It might be that we need to pray about it several times in order for it to let go from our hearts. Whatever, we need to bring these things to the foot of the cross and pray, place our burdens there, and we need to let them go. Second thing, we've discerned that we can't let it go and that it's an issue, and we need to do something about it. And we might have decided that it's worth it, and we need to address it. It might be that we find out that someone else has something against us. It might be that we have a hurt caused by someone else, and we need to address it with them. It might be that we know of an issue, we know of a sin in someone else's life, and we can see where this is going to go for them, and so we need to raise it with them in this context. Sometimes we do have to speak to those who have hurt us, but before we do that, we need to remember the words of Jesus, Matthew 7:3-5. He says this: "Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother or sister's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say that to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your own eye." We cannot go on and address stuff with other people unless we have dealt with things ourselves. If you want more on that, I encourage you to listen to last week's podcast. So we resolve to talk to the person about an issue. And it's critical that we choose the right time in order to bring this to a head, or to be able to speak into this. You know, often when I'm talking to couples before they get married in a pre-marriage that I do, I often say to them, you know, bringing an issue to your partner at 11, 12, 1 a.m. on a Friday morning is a sure way to pour fuel on that fire. You know, of course, none of the marriages here would ever have conflict in them at all, would they? You know, conflict is a normal part of our relationship and our marriage, but it's actually okay to set aside some specific time to have conflict. And I say to pre-married couples, you know, you can diarize when to have conflict. If it's really that important, deal with it when it's most appropriate, when you're most fresh. But then, so if you're going to go to someone, then find the best time to do it. But make sure you choose the right way in which to address the topic. So some opening lines will be the closing line if you address it incorrectly. So let me give you a couple of examples, really off the top of my head, that you can choose from, and you'll see which ones would best suit a way in which to raise a conflict an issue with somebody. Example one, Frank, I hated it, by the way, in which you spoke to me in front of all those people. Don't you ever do that again. That's a closing line for an opening line. Tanya, others have told me what you said behind my back when I'm not around. What the heck is going on? Closing and opening line. Jeremy, for a while now, I've been sensing that you have been disappointed with me. I'd really like to talk with you about it and understand what's going on with you and why you feel this way. Can we have a conversation? Do you see some of the differences and the ways in which we do stuff? As you can see, if we open our comments with grace, with humility, if we come with open doors, not shut judgments, we will certainly get a better outcome. In Matthew 18, Jesus gives us instructions how to have a face-to-face conversation. And you can read it in a way that suggests Jesus is saying, be quite confrontational. Let me read it to you. Verse 15 of Matthew 18. If your brother or sister sins against you, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. And if they listen to you, you have won them over. That phrase there, go and point out their fault, is an interesting phrase, isn't it? I mean, what does Jesus mean? A little flow chart? Some issues that are going on? Maybe a PowerPoint presentation you could bring out and set up? Here, you know, my second point and my third dot line is, you know, whenever we read the scriptures, we need to read it in the context. And if you read just before Jesus gives these instructions to the disciples, you'll find Jesus teaching on the metaphor of a loving shepherd who's looking for a lost sheep and then rejoices when it's found. My friends, this tells me that the context is about restoration, not about condemnation. If that's not enough, read after this block where Jesus is talking. And you'll see that he tells the parable of the unmerciful servant, which is immediately following this teaching on if your brother or sister sins, go and talk to them. And we see this parable of the unmerciful servant, which says and reminds us to be as merciful and forgiving to others as God is to us. So what do we learn from this? What do we learn from Jesus' teachings on this? That there is something much more loving and redemptive than simply confronting others with a great long list of their wrongs. That our speaking the truth can be restorative. So what's the bottom line for us then if we actually have to deal with something with someone face to face? It's this. When we take the courage to speak to someone else about an issue with us, about an issue that's going on between us, we perceived or really is, that going with an open heart and a humble spirit and a willingness to listen, 99 times out of 100 will be the catalyst to restore the relationship and indeed take that relationship to another depth. The third thing. And here's where we get an understanding of a bit more of God's heart and God's ways. Conflict can provide the opportunity to demonstrate the love of Jesus and give us the chance to witness to the gospel, even against people who have attacked us. Let me explain. The gospel teaches that people matter, that we are all precious, that we are all wanted. And when we go to someone with a genuine heart of humility and with a deep desire to be restored, what we are telling them is that they matter and that we are going to treat them the same way we understand God treats us. Rather than our action being destructive or evasive, our actions become redemptive. It tells people that our relationships are more than just cursory, that they're not just disposable. They're not people like, oh, okay, I've offended them and that's been an issue with them. Oh, well, shut them out of my life. We'll move on. There's plenty more friends. And we say, no. You matter to me. You're important in my life. And you're so important. I'm going to do this courageous step. And I'm going to step up and I'm going to have this tough conversation, tough because, you know, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, who gets a lump in their throat when you confront, when you talk to someone about some stuff that's deep? I mean, it's tough, but when you do it, it says, you are important. You are valuable. And I'm modeling the gospel to you and saying, you matter to me as much as you matter to God. We need our brothers and sisters to do that, don't we? To remind us. We need our brothers and sisters to speak into our lives as well. To tell us. We need others to say, hey, there's something going on between us and we need to talk about it. I've long pondered the verse in Proverbs 27, verse 6, which says, the first part of it says, wounds from a friend can be trusted. Or the way I've sort of paraphrased it is, blessed are the wounds of a brother. My friends, when we speak the truth in love, when we go to those whom there is an issue between us and we say, I've got to talk to you about this, we're doing something that's rarely done in society. And what we're doing is restorative. Fourth point. The fourth and the last thing in all this is the greatest challenge to us. And it comes at the heart of the gospel and it comes at the heart of our belief. And it's this, that we believe that people can change. That the gospel works, that people can, under the influence of the Holy Spirit, be transformed, be changed, and actually be different. Do you believe that? That people can be changed? Do you truly believe that? It's not rhetorical. Do you believe that? That people can change? This is the truth of the gospel. When we go to someone else in love, we do so with that at the base of our motives, that us raising this will actually change something in them and quite probably in us as well. I had a mentor from years past who was a great counselor, and he would often say to me, hurt people hurt people. You know, I'm no great counselor, but I know that when people are free, when they are forgiven, when they are restored, when they are redeemed, they get a chance to write another chapter in the storybook of their life. And that's what we believe. And that's what God is in the business of as he works through all of us. Jesus works in people's lives and they can be different. That is our fundamental belief, that people can change. It is a gospel truth. It changes the way we approach people and the way we pray into how we deal with what's going on relationally with others around us. You know, there's heaps more to say on this topic, and we'll have a bit more to say on this next week. But I want to end here in this particular point. You can see we've got the cross set up. Here it is in front of us. It's a bit awkward and it's a bit in the way, but that's the way it should be, isn't it? It should be. We should go around it, not us. Not it go around us. And this morning I want to ask you to do something courageous. On your seats you'll have a little blank piece of paper. I've raided the office and it's a scrap piece of paper. And it's got stuff on one side probably, and it doesn't matter. Don't worry about that. But I've provided them all for you. There's heaps more out the front here too, and there's pens out the front here as well. The reason I've given you this is because all of us carry some hurt from somebody else inside of us. Sometimes it is enough for us to write their names down and let it go. And I'm offering you a way to let it go this morning. If you come out the front, you'll see that the first service have already responded really significantly to this. And what I'm asking you to do is to write down maybe a name of somebody. Put it in code if you need to. Maybe you'd like to write down something that's happened in your life, an event that you need to let go of. And I encourage you then, when the band, they're going to play for us a beautiful song. We're going to stay seated and let them play. And I'm asking you to write those things down. And when it's right for you to stand up and to come out the front and to lay that burden at the foot of the cross and symbolically say, Jesus, this is your business. I need you to carry this. I can't carry this any longer. It's too heavy for me. I'm sick of being like this. And so whenever you like, during that song or during the second song, that's fine. End of the service, of course, we'll have some prayer at the end of the service. But at some stage, come Come and deal with it. Come and bring it here. Now, for some of us, that might inspire us. That might be enough to let things go. For others of us, that might be a catalyst that we've got to go and talk to somebody. We've got to go and seek some wise counsel about that. But here's our chance. Let's respond to what God's doing in our life, and let's bring it and let's lay it at the foot of the cross and let Jesus deal with it.